Here it is!
From deep inside your radio.
Gee, the here it is man was loud today. I guess he's full of springtime. I don't know about in the rest of the country, but in New Orleans, this was the week that I got to finally start wearing short-sleeve shirts again. Congratulations to us all. On the other hand, ladies and gentlemen, I have a question for you. You might know. How many staplings should a stapler be good for? I bought a new stapler this week. I know, this is not the most important thing in the world, is it? And, I actually stood in the aisle for a good, well, for a what I would consider a womanly amount of time, you know, considering the purchase. I don't know, that one's gray. But not to be dismissive, I was actually considering, okay, they've got all these features that they're bragging on. I just want a basic, sturdy, simple, dependable stapler. And finally, I found one. Looked like the staplers, you know, from 50 years ago. Four staples came out of it before it jammed. Four! Now it's a paperweight. Of course, I made the obvious mistake. I bought it at Office Depot. And I now realize I should have bought it at Staples. Because if you're going to put that... Anyway, ladies and gentlemen, it's now, I think, safe for me to talk about healthcare reform. You notice that this probably has been the radio or any kind of broadcast that has had the least to say on the most talked about subject of the last year. And that's by design, because I figured we'd all heard enough about that. And I didn't know anything about it. Still don't, but I've noticed that the Obama administration has now decided, after the bill passed, to start going around and explaining it. From the Better Late Than Never filed, Governor Ed Rendell of Pennsylvania was on one of the Sunday Morning Yak shows today and had the talking points. And the talking points are simply contrary to the Republicans saying, we're going to run for repeal. That's our platform. The Democrats are saying, oh, boy, once you figure out what's in this for you, you're going to like it. The American people are going to like this bill come November. Which is, you know, interesting messaging. I just think it's the wrong messenger. Get the guy from Men's Warehouse. You're going to like the way this bill looks. See, I'm believing more. You're going to like the way this bill looks. Him? Although, even with him, I got problems. Because, of course, his last line is, you're going to like the way you look. I guarantee it. And then I think, I've seen that commercial 4,000 times. He guarantees it, but if I ever want to enforce the guarantee, I don't know his name. Who is he? Dear Mr. Men's Warehouse. On the other hand, the Republicans, in addition to repeal, are going for suing the government. Yes, I know. We all thought you can't do that. They're doing it. And they're suing on the most interesting basis. The federal government, the Constitution doesn't allow the federal government to require you to purchase a product, i.e. health insurance. Okay. Then, logically, the same Constitution that forbids a Congress from forcing you to buy a product forbids the Congress from forbidding you to buy a product. So there go the drug laws, huh? You with that? You down with that? And I, you know, the number of legal scholars have weighed in already on the plausibility of this lawsuit ever getting anywhere. The one I noticed was Charles Freed, who was Solicitor General under Ronald Reagan. That must have been uncomfortable. No, I mean in the Reagan administration. And he derides the chances of this lawsuit, the plausibility of this lawsuit, the intellectual underpinnings of it as preposterous, which just made me wonder, wasn't there a time when the Republicans were against junk lawsuits? Hello, welcome to the show.
One loaf of bread. We've run out of petrol.
The Gulf Stream's dead. Last tree on the planet. Last fish in the sea. The last glass of water. Well, give it to me. Trillions of chopsticks are used every day. Not counting the cartons, a snide takeaway. Where's it all come from? Where's it all gone? If money can't buy it, then something's gone wrong. Can't sleep at night, lie in a sweat. Don't prickle your conscience, you'll get your feet wet. Roll over, why don't you? 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 Every man for himself becomes the war cry. We'll take to the bunkers and shut out the sky. Let's face it, we've had it, we've rotted it up. We've bladdered the planet and squandered the stuff. Old school religions are running the show. Aristocrats and politicos are having their go. It's not what you are, it's who that you know. The ship doesn't sail if the wind doesn't blow. Can't sleep at night, you've left it too late. Let go of the wheel and open the gate. Roll over, why don't you? 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 You screwed up the ocean, you've blighted the land. You've kiboshed everything that's passed through your hands. You've flooded the valleys, polluted the sky. Poisoned the rivers, and you've let people die.
From the edge of Lake Pontchartrain in New Orleans, Louisiana, I'm Harry Shearer, welcoming you to this edition of the show, unlike any other, because they all are. Ladies and gentlemen, let's check in on the world of, the wonderful world of AFPAC. I should hire Gilbert to do that now, I guess, now that the government's not saying it anymore. AFPAC! The Pakistani government is now seeking a court's permission. This is rich. The Pakistani government is now seeking a court's permission to reopen its probe into, guess who? A.Q. Khan and his role in nuclear weapons-related transactions with Iran and Iraq. Goodness gracious, he's been doing that. We must investigate. If the court agrees, the inquiry could create new headaches for Khan, like he's had headaches. Well, he's been under house arrest since detailed information about Pakistan's exports of nuclear gear first became public way back in 2004. Khan, considered the father of Pakistan's nuclear weapons program, mother unknown, now is shepherded everywhere by security personnel and generally prohibited from meeting with foreigners or traveling abroad. Restrictions that he's protested to the court. So Dick Cheney's in better shape so far. So far. And, however, he's never been questioned by Americans. Why would we want any information from him about that? The government cited two recent articles in the Washington Post about Khan in making its request. Pakistani government has blocked experts from interviewing Khan, even though a bill approved by Congress to aid Pakistan calls for some funds to be withheld until Obama, the president, certifies that Pakistan has provided relevant information from or direct access to Pakistani nationals. Pakistan has also withheld damaging allegations by Khan in his official written account of his past dealings with North Korea, Iran, and Libya, a document which we discussed here when it was made available to the Washington Post. Khan claims Pakistan's military leadership approved of his exports to North Korea of advanced centrifuges. Pakistan has always maintained he was a rogue acting alone. A widely circular... we may see more about A.Q. Khan. Just because he helped Iran, Iraq, Libya, North Korea build nuclear weapons, that's not a concern, is it? Also, from our friend Pakistan, this is so deep. It's deeper than radio, let's put it that way. And that's not all that deep. An American charged, this is from the New York Times, American charged with helping plan the terrorist attacks in Mumbai. Remember that 2 years ago? An American is charged with helping plan it. Well, he moved effortlessly, it now turns out, between the United States, Pakistan, and India for nearly 7 years, training at a militant camp in Pakistan on five occasions. This, according to a plea agreement released by the Justice Department. Now, you could just say, Pakistan, if we know there are terrorist training camps in your country, before you get some aid from us, maybe you might think about closing down your terrorist training camps. The Odyssey of David Headley included scouting targets in several cities in India and meeting with a senior operative of Al-Qaeda in Pakistan's tribal areas. Well, you know, they're so tribal. We can't do anything about that. They're tribal. These details of Headley's activities contained in the plea agreement raise troubling questions, says the Times, about how an American citizen could travel for so long undetected from Chicago to well-established terrorist training camps in Pakistan. Well, he had a good visa. The document shows Headley made two trips to North Waziristan, the heart of Al-Qaeda operations in the tribal area. It's so very tribal. His handlers, the document reveals, included a former Pakistan military commander from the Pakistani military, that would appear to be, with ties to a Pakistani extremist group and even Al-Qaeda. Really? Pakistani military? Maybe even their intelligence has ties to Al-Qaeda? You've got to be kidding me. From there, Headley not only helped plan the Mumbai attack, says the document, he was put in contact with an Al-Qaeda cell in Europe that may still be active. The document shows the cell was well supplied with weapons and money and primed for an attack until the moment Headley was arrested by the FBI. The damn FBI. Why don't we have military doing that? Headley divulged details of his... Oh, he's talking to the FBI. Really? Like he didn't need to be tortured or anything. I'm sorry. Enhanced. Headley had divulged details of his life as a spy and militant as a part of a plea agreement that will spare him the death penalty. That's what makes him talk. I thought enhanced. I thought it had to be enhanced. It's enhanced, not death penalty. See, it is enhanced. It's the enhanced life sentence. Ladies and gentlemen, we are not number one. Again.
U.S. is being outpaced by China and other countries in the global race to develop green technology industries. The Pew Charitable Trusts, the Pew, in conjunction with Bloomberg, is publishing a report this week that characterizes different countries in developing and adopting clean energy techniques. The U.S., we're good when it comes to technical innovation. But China last year took the lead in asset financing, that's investment in renewable energy projects, actually building the projects with funds. It also will pass the U.S. as the country with the most installed capacity of renewable energy this year. Technical innovations do play a big role in bringing down the cost of solar or biofuels, but large-scale installation of clean energy products, as in actually building the things, is the key to bringing down cost compared to fossil fuels. And that's where China's in the lead. Once again, we're not number one. I'm proud of it, apparently. The focus now turns to a world that is clean, cheap, safe, too clean to meter. Our nuclear future. There's a place down south of Los Angeles, kind of San Diego way, called San Onofre, where there have been a pair, I believe, of nuclear power plants. I don't know if they're actually could be used for bomb. No, they're nuclear power plants for a number of years now. Operators of the San Onofre nuclear power plant faced a skeptical public and hard questions by regulators this week about when the plant is going to fix long-standing weaknesses in its safety culture. That phrase must make you feel good right about now. Long-standing weaknesses in its safety culture. First of all, I love, just linguistically, safety culture. It reminds me of, there's a wave, it, just linguistically, there's a wave of crime among youth in Great Britain. And of course, since guns are quite rare there, the crimes involve the wielding of knives, fairly nasty looking knives. And this has become known in UK media as knife culture. And I keep expecting to go to the opera and see, you know, La Boheme, you know, and she pulls out a saber or a scimitar or just, you know, a nice grapefruit knife. Plant managers at San Onofre, back to the story, admitted that the plant has problems, but it's clean, it's safe. They told Nuclear Regulatory Commission officials they've established new procedures to fix them. That's what we need around here, new procedures. It's those damn old procedures. I blame them. That's safe to blame. It's safe to blame old procedures, isn't it? And when we're playing the blame game? I know we're not supposed to play the blame game, but you can play the blame game with old procedures. That's an exception. That's in the rules of the game. The NRC and representatives of Southern California Edison, the plant's operator, held a public meeting this week at Dana Point. Many of the people attending were plant workers. I guess they got the day off. The NRC issued two letters this month, one citing a, quote, chilling effect at the plant that said, plant workers feared retaliation if they raised concerns about nuclear safety issues. That's a bad procedure. I'm going to point my finger at that. Plant workers feared retaliation if they raised concerns about nuclear safety issues. Let's change that procedure. I would suggest. The other was the agency's annual evaluation letter, which said the plant has operated safely but continues to show a lax safety culture. Meaning operators don't always follow prescribed procedures. Those damn procedures again. You know, if we could just get rid of the procedures, and managers don't always follow up to assure tasks are performed correctly, what then would the managers be doing? I thought that would be kind of what managers do. In October of last year, the NRC placed San Onofre on regulatory response, meaning it would conduct extra inspections until the plant fixed its problems. We would call it, I guess, probation. Chuck Castro, an NRC deputy regional administrator, said the plant's lapses were of a low to moderate risk. So what would that be? Orange? I'm still in the color codes. Yellow? It wouldn't be red, I understand. Didn't jeopardize public safety, he said. But, quote, we're still not satisfied with the progress the plant has made. San Onofre's chief nuclear officer opened the meeting by saying the plant is committed to protecting public health and safety and, quote, we're disappointed in the rate of our performance improvement, unquote. This is the language, ladies and gentlemen, of people who don't pay a penalty if they do stuff wrong. We're disappointed in the rate of our performance improvement. Sounds like the coach of the Hornets. He also said the plant was placed on probation by the National Academy of Nuclear Training for training deficiencies. What more can they do wrong, aside from blow up? When a plant is placed on that probation, its training receives increased scrutiny from the Nuclear Regulatory Commission. Here we go again. It's a circle kind of thing. The plant manager, Doug Bauder, said they're focused on improving plant past procedures, conducting more rigorous training, and informed an employee-led team to get workers to embrace the changes. These are the workers who are intimidated about complaining about nuclear safety. Now they have to embrace the changes. It's the workers. It's the workers, ladies and gentlemen. And NRC Deputy Director Tony Viegel said after four inspections, human performance at San Onofre continues to be a problem. The monkeys are working out well. The gerbils have shown improvement, but the human performance continues to be a problem. He challenged the operators to prove their methods will yield results. I don't believe we got good traction in 2008, Bauder said. In 2009, we looked around and saw we didn't have good procedures, so we put those building blocks into place. We're really focused on behaviors now. The euphemisms, they're growing a garden of them. The Unit 2 reactor at San Onofre has been shut down for maintenance since September of last year because it takes a while to maintain. I guess you tell me, department. Don't tell me now, you know, but later when you get a chance. And now, ladies and gentlemen, news from outside the bubble. And while I do this feature, I'm actually improving my procedures. I just want you to know that. From The Independent in London, corruption, desertion, and drug abuse within the Afghan police are threatening its ability to take over the fight against the Taliban and the UK's chances of an exit from the country, according to United Kingdom government documents. In fact, it's a series of internal Foreign Office papers obtained by The Independent on Sunday. It lays bare the deep concerns of British officials over the standard of recruits to the Afghan National Police, ranging from high casualty rates and illiteracy to low pay. The memos warn that building an effective police force, quote, will take many years. Hey, we got them. It also reveals how non-existent ghost recruits may account for up to a quarter of the purported strength of the police force. Well, nothing would scare a terrorist more than a ghost policeman, I think. I think that's good deterrence there. The attrition rate among police officers, including losses caused by deaths, desertion, and dismissals, the dreaded 3Ds, often due to positive drug tests, is as high as 60% in Helmand Province. That's repeatedly identified as among the worst areas for a series of problems. Half the latest batch of recruits in the province initially tested positive for narcotics. British officials also raised concerns over the police force's involvement in bribery, collusion with the drug trade. Well, you got to get them somehow. You don't expect them to be retail, do you? Intimidation of school children and limited engagement with the community. I thought intimidating the school children was enough engagement with the community. In a dramatic insight into the frustration felt by British officials in Afghanistan, one suggested arresting the worst offenders and handing them over to prosecutors to make an example of them. And, from the Sunday Times, about our friends the Saudis. Saudi Arabia is pouring hundreds of millions of dollars into Islamist groups in the Balkans, remember them, to spread hatred of the West and recruit fighters for jihad in Afghanistan. Things are going well all over the world. According to officials in Macedonia, Islamic fundamentalism threatens to destabilize the Balkans. Again, strict Wahhabi and Salafi factions. Weren't the Salafis the gatecrashers? No, that's different. That was the Salahis. Funded by Saudi organizations are clashing with traditionally moderate local Muslims. Fundamentalists have financed the construction of scores of mosques. Not stores. Scores. Because they need more mosques. ladies and gentlemen. Always need more mosques. As well as handing some followers up to almost $300 a month. They're expected not only to grow beards, but to persuade their wives to wear the niqab, or face veil, a custom virtually unknown in the liberal Islamic tradition of the Balkans. Government sources in traditionally secular Macedonia said they were monitoring up to 50 al-Qaeda volunteers recruited to fight in Afghanistan. Classified documents seen by the Sunday Times revealed that Macedonian officials are also investigating a number of Islamic charities, some based in Saudi Arabia, which are active throughout the Balkans and are suspected of spreading extremism and laundering money for terrorist organizations. The leader of the Islamic community in Macedonia said a number of mosques had forcibly been taken over by radical groups. Their so-called Wahhabi teachings are completely alien to our traditions and to the essence of Islam, which is a tolerant and inclusive religion, said the leader of the Islamic community in Macedonia. In some mosques, believers are being told that Macedonia, which sent 200 soldiers to Iraq and Afghanistan, had been tricked into supporting a crusade against Islam spearheaded by Britain and America. Radical clerics have shown footage from Afghanistan, Iraq, and the Palestinian territories to illustrate their claims that the West is waging war on Islam. This being funded, once again, ladies and gentlemen, by Saudi Arabia. And I have to say, it's from the... that's from the Sunday Times, which now is charging for people to read it on the Internet. So I'm going to ask each of you to send me a dollar for having read that to you over the air, just to defray my costs. Now, more news from outside the bubble. And we get to a story you're gonna think I'm like trying to find every possible story that deals with this matter that came out this week. And you might be right, because gosh, there have been a lot of them. From the Times of London. You can pay me a dollar to read this to you too. The head of the Roman Catholic Church in Ireland will be pressed to quit if he refuses to resign over the growing child abuse scandal there. Nothing less than Cardinal Sean Brady's resignation will diminish fury at the highest levels in Rome over his role in the cover-up of the pedophile priest scandal in Ireland. The Vatican's mad at him. The Northern Ireland Assembly prepared last night to order an official investigation into child abuse in Northern Ireland. This is Northern Ireland, after details emerged of more attacks on children by members of the clergy. So both Ireland and Northern Ireland. They've spread it around. Brady is spending the days before Easter considering his position. A lovely Britishism. I'm considering my position. Which means my ass is on fire. Although there is no canonical procedure to remove him, those damn procedures, if he refuses to go voluntarily, pressure from the Holy See will make his departure inevitable. Ireland needs a fresh start, a source in Rome said. By clinging on, he's putting his own interests before the church's, unquote, the Vatican, referring to the cardinal in Ireland. The inquiry would be similar to that which uncovered a shocking litany of historic crimes in the Republic of Ireland last year. An official investigation is expected to cost up to $60 million and take no longer than 5 years. By announcing an apostolic visitation to the Irish church last week, the Pope has effectively placed it in receivership. All right. That's Ireland. Also from the Sunday Times, pay me a dollar for reading this, new revelations about the Pope's alleged role in covering up accusations of sexual abuse by Catholic clergy has exposed the Vatican to the risk of lawsuits brought by victims around the world. To quote Wolf Blitzer's inflection, around the world. Mounting anger at the Catholic Church's failure to act on predatory priests in the U.S., Europe, and Mexico has plunged the papacy into an institutional crisis described by an American Catholic newspaper last week as the largest in centuries. This week, the Vatican denounced the aggressive persistence of critics who were alleging to personally involve the Holy Father in the matter of abuse. A spokesman told Vatican Radio the Pope's record was above discussion. That's pretty far up there. But the talk in Catholic circles was of little else, as the Pope's former life as Cardinal Joseph Ratzinger, Archbishop of Munich, came under intensifying scrutiny. Last week it was alleged that as the head of the Vatican office monitoring priestly misconduct, Ratzinger failed to punish Father Lawrence Murphy, who abused up to 200 boys at a Wisconsin school for the deaf. Instead of having defrocked or reported, instead of being defrocked or reported to police, Murphy remained a priest until his death in 1998, buried in his vestments, I'm told. "We're talking about a man who, before he became pope, knew what Murphy was doing and did nothing about it," said Donald Marshall, a mechanic who claims Murphy, Father Murphy, assaulted him in 1997 when he was 13. The reports coincided with the burgeoning German row over Father Peter Hullermann, a Bavarian priest who received therapy for pedophilia in Ratzinger's diocese and then was transferred to a new parish where he continued molesting boys. The Vatican insisted this week Ratzinger, now the Pope, had no knowledge of the decision to reassign Hullermann, despite reports that the then archbishop was sent a memo with details of the case. Hullermann was eventually convicted of sex abuse in 1986. Adding to the Vatican's embarrassment, the acknowledgment late this week that by a prominent Catholic order that its Mexican founder, the late Marcial Maciel Degollado, known as Father Maciel, had not only molested trainee priests, but had also fathered several children. Well, you got to get them from somewhere. It was largely on Ratzinger's initiative that the Vatican reopened a moribund investigation into Maciel's activities as leader of the Legion of Christ. Maciel was a close friend of Ratzinger's predecessor, Pope John Paul II, who's considered a candidate for sainthood, but whose reputation may also be stained by the spreading sex scandal. All the latest cases involve complaints that the Vatican failed to come clean about how it handled allegations of criminal conduct. The German justice minister has complained of a Vatican wall of silence around the issue. The Pope's alleged role in the Wisconsin case emerged only when litigants who claimed to be victims of abuse obtained internal church documents as part of their lawsuit. Now U.S. lawyers in other cases are determined to sue the Vatican for access to material that may shed light on relations between Rome and American bishops and the extent to which there may have been a policy to hush up abuse by priests. Says William McMurray, a lawyer who represents victims in a Kentucky case, "I want to know what the Vatican knew and when they knew it." As a sovereign state, the Vatican has immunity from U.S. lawsuits, yet federal appeals courts in Oregon and Kentucky have allowed abuse cases to proceed. The U.S. Catholic Church has already paid out more than $1.1 billion to victims since 2004. Money recompensation is not enough for those who represent the victims. They say the church should be forced to explain why so few priests were punished for decades of abuse. And it's not just deaf boys in Wisconsin. Latest allegations of abuse aimed at another Catholic institution are getting closer to Rome. On Friday, Italian television aired allegations from men who, as children, attended a Catholic school for the deaf in Verona, where they say they were repeatedly abused. At first, the local bishop accused them of lying, until one of the staff admitted the allegations were true. The bishop then ordered an internal investigation, which found some abuse occurred, albeit a fraction of what had been alleged. Advocates for the self-described victims, however, said the diocese investigation was fatally flawed because no one interviewed the former students. In a signed statement, 67 former pupils at the School for the Deaf described sexual abuse, pedophilia, and corporal punishment from the 50s through the 80s. They named 24 priests, brothers, and lay religious men at the Institute for the Deaf. Only now, a year after the Italian case became public, is the Vatican telling the diocese to interview the victims to hear their testimony, according to the Associated Press. And the Vatican strongly defended its decision not to defrock that American priest, Father Murphy, accused of molesting some 200 deaf boys in Wisconsin. Documents show that in the mid-90s, two Wisconsin bishops urged the Vatican office, led by then-Cardinal Ratzinger, now the Pope, to let them hold a church trial against Father Murphy. The bishops admitted the trial was coming years after the alleged abuse, but argued that the deaf community in Milwaukee was demanding justice from the church. An American protester... Despite the extensive and grave allegations against Murphy, Ratzinger's deputy at the Congregation for the Doctrine of the Faith ruled that the alleged molestation had occurred too long ago, statute of limitations, babe, and that Murphy, then ailing and elderly, should instead repent and be restricted from celebrating Mass outside of his diocese. See, they came down hard on him. He did repent, by the way. You'll be relieved to know. The official Cardinal Tarciso Bertone ordered the church trial halted after Father Murphy wrote Ratzinger a letter saying he was ill, infirm, and simply want to live out the time that I have left in the dignity of my priesthood. Unquote. Father Murphy. Deaf boys in Italy, deaf boys in Wisconsin. It's a thing.
Boom, 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 boom. One or two deaf boys.
Boom, boom.
In the next room.
Boom, boom.
Now they're in the closet.
Boom, boom.
Between me and the broom.
Boom, boom.
Half a dozen deaf boys.
Boom, boom.
Nice little crowd.
Boom, boom.
They can be quiet.
Boom, boom.
And I can be loud.
Boom, boom.
Four or 20 deaf boys.
Boom, boom.
Take me all day.
Boom, boom.
Barely got the time to.
Boom, boom.
Eat and to pray.
Boom, boom.
Deaf boys can't hear me coming. Deaf boys get my heartstrings to strumming. Make me make such a joyful noise. I just can't get enough.
I just can't get
deaf boys.
Boom, 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 boom.
Half a hundred deaf boys.
Boom, boom.
Whoa, I got a head of steam.
Boom, boom.
I could be the coach.
Boom, boom.
And they could be my team.
Boom, boom.
88 deaf boys.
Boom, boom.
One for each key.
Boom, boom.
On the piano of my longing.
Boom, boom.
They play a hushed melody.
Boom, boom.
150 deaf boys.
Boom, boom.
Oh, this could get tight.
Boom, boom.
A few dozen in the morning.
Boom, boom.
And all the rest at night.
Boom, boom.
Deaf boys can't hear me coming. Deaf boys, don't you dare call it slumming. Might be a chink in my priestly poise, but how can I resist deaf boys?
Boom, 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 boom.
Now if I had a deaf boy,
boom, boom,
each day of the year,
boom, boom,
365,
boom, boom,
that would be dear.
Boom, boom.
How many deaf boys,
boom, boom,
have there actually been?
Boom, boom.
Why not ask how many,
boom, boom,
and dance on the head of a pin?
Boom, boom.
The world is full of deaf boys,
boom, boom,
and I'm only one man.
Boom, boom.
All that God expects is
boom, boom.
Do all that you can.
Boom, boom,
deaf boys can't hear me coming. Deaf boys got me hymning and humming. A shepherd with a closet full of toys. Let's hear it for those deaf
for
boys.
Boom, 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 boom.
Guess everything's going his way.
Darkness, darkness, be my pillow. Take my hand. And let me asleep in the coolness of your shadow, in the silence of your deep darkness, darkness, hide my yearning for the things that cannot be. Keep my mind from constant turning toward the things I cannot see now. Things I cannot see now. Things I cannot see. Darkness, 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 long and lonesome is the day that brings me.
This is Le Show, and now, the apologies of the week.
We're so sorry.
Last night was the climax of weeks and months of debate on a health care bill that my constituents fear and do not support. In the heat of the emotion of the debate, I exclaimed the phrase, "It's a baby killer," in reference to the agreement reached by the Democratic leadership. While I remain heartbroken over the passage of this bill and the tragic consequences it will have for the unborn, I deeply regret that my actions were mistakenly interpreted as a direct reference to Congressman Stupak himself. I've apologized to Mr. Stupak and also apologized to my colleagues for the manner in which I expressed my disappointment about the bill. The House chamber is a place of decorum and respect. That's from Congressman Neugebauer. Neugebauer. I'm sorry for mispronouncing your name, sir. This is a place of decorum and respect, this here show. Dateline Little Rock, Arkansas. The Arkansas Department of Correction has apologized to a Muslim woman who was banned from visiting an inmate because she was wearing a religious headscarf. Department spokeswoman Dina Tyler says a staff member misunderstood prison policy, which calls for a private search of anyone wearing a rig or religious headscarf. The woman was trying to visit a relative at the East Arkansas Regional Unit on the day after Christmas, when she was banned from the property. Tyler says the department sent the woman a letter apologizing for any embarrassment or inconvenience caused by prison staff. There was no disciplinary action against the workers, and the department is making sure staff understands that headscarves and wigs are allowed in the prison if they've been searched. It's procedures. We're working on new procedures. Deadline Chicago state representative has apologized for comments she made during a debate in the Illinois House. The lawmakers were debating whether to require that professional hair braiders be licensed. State Representative Monique Davis, who is African-American, argued against it. She said that hair braiding comes naturally to women of color and then said, you cannot license Latino people to make tacos. You can license them to have a restaurant. Latino House members asked her to apologize, and she did. A Grand Rapids, Michigan area man who left a threatening voicemail with U.S. Representative Mark Schauer's district has apologized. Bob Bapristis said he was upset over the health care bill and wanted to make his concerns known. He didn't know who his representative in Congress was, and so they decided to call Schauer after seeing a TV political ad that listed Schauer's name and phone number. Schauer does not represent the Grand Rapids area. I screwed up, Bapristis said. It was rude, and I was wrong. The commander of the nation's largest organization for combat veterans has issued an unusual apology for stating that President Obama's national health care reform initiative is betraying veterans. Thomas Tradewell, senior national commander of the VFW, issued a written apology for his earlier criticism of Obama and Democratic leaders for failing to exclude language, for failing to include language in the final health care reform bill that specifically exempts the veterans' health system from its effects. Tradewell, a combat-wounded Vietnam veteran, said he apologized for using too harsh of a word, but I did not apologize for our strong advocacy on the issue. It's like the health care bill riled people up or something. In a letter to two Republican senators this week, Attorney General Eric Holder apologized for not listing several friend-of-the-court briefs on the questionnaire sent to him by the Senate Judiciary Committee during his confirmation process. Holder maintained his current position on executive power is consistent with what he expressed in the briefs. A National Review column earlier this month blasted Holder for not disclosing on his questionnaire two Supreme Court amicus briefs in the terrorism case of Jose Padilla. He joined in signing. In one of the briefs, Holder and several former justice officials from the Clinton administration argued that the danger of a too powerful executive branch outweighs the risk of losing intelligence in terrorism cases prosecuted in civilian courts. Republicans pounced on the omission. Deadline Jackson, Mississippi, an Illinois lawmaker visited. This is another Illinois lawmaker apology. There's your trend for the week. An Illinois lawmaker visited the Mississippi Capitol on Saturday and apologized, took back a casual insult he flung at the southern state 3 years ago. Democratic Representative Jack Franks said he made a, quote, stupid comment when he was defending the $28 million renovation of the Illinois State House. He said back then, quote, certainly the chamber has to be nice and to befit a state of our stature. It's not like we're Mississippi. We're a rich state. Unquote. A vacationing Franks said he was surprised to find Mississippi lawmakers meeting in a rare Saturday session. He apologized to several and received a hat, a flag pin, and a tumbler from the lieutenant governor. Franks also complimented the more than 100-year-old building. Quote, I wish our capital in Illinois was as nice as this. Unquote. Uh-oh, wait till he gets back to Springfield. Another apology coming. Who vacations in Mississippi? No, please. Tell me. The president of the Vienna Boys Choir apologized this week on behalf of the famed institution as the number of, what do you think, abuse allegations rose to 11, up from 8 last week. President Walter Nettig also pledged to hold more in-depth conversations with all potential victims and offered support to anyone who wanted counseling, and we apologize in the name of the institution, he said. He was a member of the choir in the 40s, acknowledged that he recalled having exceedingly strict teachers and even hated one of them. How strict would be the question, of course. Answers forthcoming, I'm sure. Deadline Mexico City, Mexico. The Mexican government has apologized to the families of two students killed early Friday. Officials initially said they were drug gang members. Apparently they were not. Jorge Antonio Mercado Alonso and Javier Francisco Arredondo Verdugo were mechanical engineering grad students, said the Mexican Interior Ministry in its apology for the shootings. Sorry about the shootings. Mexican soldiers chasing criminals who had fired on an army patrol shot and killed the students, the Interior Ministry said. Some of the criminals had fled onto the college campus. The Mexican government expresses its most deeply felt condolences to the families, the Interior Ministry said in a release on its web page. The federal government will intensify its investigation to find out what happened, the ministry said. Friday, the Mexican officials had said the two dead men were part of the criminal gang that shot at the soldiers. University officials said Friday all students were safe. Apparently they weren't. Deadline, Accra, Ghana. U.S. oil company Kosmos Energy has apologized to the government of Ghana, and negotiations are continuing over the sale of the company's stake in a massive oil field there. It's not clear what they're apologizing for. Kosmos officials apologized to the Ghanaian president. He didn't elaborate on what prompted the apology. Oh. The most mysterious apology we've had so far, ladies and gentlemen, on Apologies of the Week. Dayline, Mexico City, 30 years after a sharpshooter fired a single shot at Oscar Romero, the Archbishop of San Salvador, killing him as he celebrated Mass. El Salvador's president apologized this week for the assassination that helped push the country toward civil war. Mauricio Funes, the first president from the left since that the 1992 peace accords ended the civil war, 75,000 people were killed, asked for forgiveness in the name of the state. The University of California leaders apologized this week to black UC San Diego students for racial incidents recently at the campus and proposed changes in admissions policy aimed at boosting enrollment of minorities across the system. UC Regents acknowledged that the San Diego episodes, including an off-campus student party that mocked Black History Month, had brought attention to the low enrollment of African-American students on the campus, just about 1.6%. When Robert Graves, the director of the Census Bureau, appeared on C-SPAN this week, he found himself having to defend the racial designations on the census form. A female caller said, "I am black. I did not appreciate the black, the African-American, and Negro. I do not like that. It really hurt my feelings. To me, that is racist." Graves, who has dealt with the, quote, Negro designation before, apologized, explaining that before the 2000 census began, there were many older African-Americans who called themselves Negro. He said he doubted the category would still be around for the next census. That the aforementioned Legion of Christ, the Mexican religious order, whose late founder was revealed to have molested many young seminarians, formally apologized to his victims this week. And the chairman of the Intergovernmental Panel on Climate Change, Dr. R.K. Pachauri, has apologized for the way his organization handled complaints about mistakes in its most recent report. The Apologies of the Week, ladies and gentlemen, a copyrighted feature of this broadcast.
É pau, é pedra, é o fim do caminho, é o resto de toco, é um pouco sozinho, é um caco de vidro, é a vida, é o sol, é a noite, é a morte, é o laço, é o anzol, é peroba do campo,
é o nó da madeira,
canga.
É uma Tita Pereira,
é madeira de vento,
da Ribanceira,
é um mistério profundo,
é o queira ou não queira,
é o vento ventando, é o fim da ladeira, é a viga, é o vão, festa da comeira,
é a chuva chovendo, é conversa ribeira das águas de março, é o fim da canseira,
é o pé, é o chão,
é a mastradeira,
passarinho na mão,
pedra de atiradeira,
é uma ave no céu,
é uma ave no chão,
é um regato, é uma fonte,
é um pedaço de pão,
é o fundo do poço, é o fim do caminho, no rosto o desgosto, é um pouco sozinho, é um estrepe,
é um breu,
é uma ponta,
é um ponto,
é um pino,
pingando,
é uma cor,
é um conto,
é um peixe, é um gesto,
é uma prata brilhando,
é a luz da manhã,
é o tijolo chegando,
é a lenha, é o dia, é o fim da picada, é a garrafa de cana, estilhaço na estrada,
é o projeto da casa, é o corpo na cama, é o carro enguiçado, é a lama, é a lama,
é um passo,
é uma ponte,
é um sapo,
é uma rã,
é um resto
de mato,
na luz
da manhã,
são as águas de março fechando o verão,
a promessa de vida no teu coração.
Cobra é um pau,
é João,
é José,
é um espinho,
na mão,
é um corte,
no pé,
são as águas de março, fechando o verão, é a promessa de vida no teu coração, é pau,
é pedra,
é o fim
do caminho,
é um resto
de toco,
é um pouco,
sozinho. É um passe, é uma ponte.
É um sapo, é uma rã.
É um belo horizonte.
É uma febre terçã.
São as águas de março fechando o verão. É a promessa de vida no teu coração. Pau,
pedra,
vinho,
peixe,
coco,
ovo,
vinho,
água,
hidro,
vida,
ó. São as águas de março fechando o verão. É a promessa de vida no teu coração.
Padaba,
pode vazia,
zazaziza,
azada
minha,
anda bebê,
anda
bebê.
Now, just briefly, ladies and gentlemen, news of the Olympic movement. The number of prostitutes working near the main Olympic site in Stratford, East London, has reportedly doubled already since work began on the stadium, with an accompanying rise in cases of sexually transmitted diseases. The Olympics minister has held meetings with officials of the Vancouver Olympics, where the number of sex workers increased fivefold to around 1,000 during the Games, and is working with the police to prevent a similar influx in London. It's a movement, and everyone needs one, every day. Send them to Pakistan for terrorist training. That should be easy enough. Ladies and gentlemen, that concludes this week's edition of Le Show. The program returns next week at the same time over these same stations over NPR worldwide throughout Europe, the USN 440 cable system in Japan, around the world to the facilities of the American Forces Network, up and down the east coast of North America via the shortwave giant WBCQ The Planet, 7.415 megahertz shortwave. On the mighty 104 in Berlin, around the world via the internet at two different locations, live and archived, whenever you want it, harryshearer.com and kcrw.com. Available on your smartphone through stitcher.com. Available as a free download to members at audible.com/LeShow. And available as a free podcast at kcrw.com. And it'd be just like tightening up those procedures if you'd agree to join with me then, would you? All righty, thank you very much. Typical show chapeau to the San Diego, Pittsburgh, Chicago, in exile, and Hawaii desks. Thanks to Jenny Lawson here at WWNO-FM for help with today's broadcast. Thanks to the folks at Office Depot for those four stables that worked. And thanks, as always, to Pam Halstead. Le Show is on Twitter at LeTwits. Program, as I say, returns next week, and you're going to like the way it sounds. The show comes to you from Century of Progress Productions and originates through the facilities of KCRW Santa Monica, a community recognized around the world, I say, as the home of the homeless.